Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. Today's 21st century Coast Guard operates in a complex and ever-changing environment. Increasing demands across the maritime domain require near-term agility while strategically investing finite resources for tomorrow. As a unique force with both military and civil authorities, the U.S. Coast Guard and its missions touch nearly every facet of the nation's expansive maritime domain. The U.S. Coast Guard, its people, and assets are essential to national security and economic prosperity. For over 226 years, history has proven the U.S. Coast Guard responsive, capable, agile, and most of all, faithful to its motto, Semper Paratus, always ready. What is the U.S. Coast Guard's strategic direction? How is the U.S. Coast Guard modernizing to be ready for today and prepared for tomorrow? We will explore these questions and so much more with a very special guest, Admiral Paul Zeekoft, 25th Commandant of the U.S. Coast Guard. Admiral, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Don Fanhagen. Don, welcome.
Thank you.
Admiral, before we delve into specific initiatives, perhaps you could provide us with a brief overview of the rich history and mission of the United States Coast Guard. As one of the oldest U.S. government agencies, how has it evolved into a critical component of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security?
This year, we'll celebrate our 226th year of service. This is a special year because it's our 100th year in aviation. But if you go back to 1790, at that point, Alexander Hamilton, the father of the Coast Guard, said if we had 10 revenue cutters judiciously stationed, you know, at our ports, it was a point in time where we were bankrupt following the Revolutionary War. And they were really there for customs duty and smuggling. Fast forward 226 years, well, we still have issues with customs, port security, smuggling. Now it's drugs. And the Coast Guard has grown and evolved to where we have just ships alone named cutters, over 244 ships versus 10. So we've come a long way in the last 226 years.
You know, with such a critical mission, it's interesting that the Coast Guard, most folks really probably don't realize you have a dual military and law enforcement status. Could you elaborate a little bit on that scope, the multi-mission scope, and how is Coast Guard organized, the size of its budget, and give us a sense of the geographical footprint?
We're a force of 88,000 strong, but that includes 32,000 all-volunteer Coast Guard auxiliarists. But first and foremost, we're a military service under Title 10. I sit with the chairman and the Joint Chiefs of Staff on all deliberations when it comes to warfighting and military personnel. We're also a law enforcement authority. We're a member of the national intelligence community. We're a humanitarian service when it comes to safety of life at sea. Most people are familiar with our search and rescue missions. We're a regulator. We regulate maritime commerce. We safeguard maritime commerce, and we maintain the waterways that move. 95% of global commerce moves by sea. So the Coast Guard has a key role in all of those areas as well.
I'd like to transition to your specific role. Would you tell us more about your duties and responsibilities as Commandant of the U.S. Coast Guard? How do you support the overall mission of the Department of Homeland Security?
And Don, it comes in a number of flavors. First, I'm the service chief for the Coast Guard. Within the Department of Homeland Security, we're the largest component within the Department of Homeland Security. But it's imperative that as a military and as a law enforcement and as a humanitarian service, that we are in lockstep with the Department of Homeland Security and their quadrennial Homeland Security Review, that our missions resonate with the department's missions. I'm also the chairman of the Interdiction Committee within the Office of National Drug Control Policy as I lead the interdiction efforts on a global scale. And so if you look at where the Coast Guard is, we're actually on all seven continents at given times of the year. This is the one time of the year we're not in Antarctica. We just pulled out of there, but we'll be back down there early winter. So we are now a globalized Coast Guard with a broad suite of authorities that go with that.
So, Admiral, I think you're probably hitting your two-year tenure time frame. So I wonder, in that time that you've been leading the Coast Guard, what are your top, say, three challenges that you faced, and how have you sought to address those challenges?
Prior, our biggest challenge was just getting the number of overseers to understand the Coast Guard. We would often describe ourselves by our 11 statutory authorities that translate to missions. And if you start rattling off 11 statutory missions, by the time you get to number 4 or 5, an overseer will say, well, it's clear you just have too many missions. So we reframed the narrative. We looked at – we have broad authorities in the Arctic at a point in time where we're seeing unprecedented human activity in the Arctic region. We've seen between unaccompanied minors, drug flows in the Western Hemisphere. The Coast Guard has over 40 counter-drug bilateral agreements with all of the transit source zone nations in Central South America, Caribbean island nations. So we're very relevant there as well. When we saw energy spike, and now it's come back the other way, but the Coast Guard has a key role in regulating that commerce, safeguarding that commerce, and the event of an oil spill, responding to those acts as well. All of our authorities resonate there as well. And then with cyber, we kicked out a cyber strategy, and that is everything from preventing acts of terrorism by defending your cyber domain, using cyber offensively, and then we also work with the maritime industry so they can protect their cyber interests as well. So we rolled out 4 strategies in the last 2 years, one on Arctic, another Western Hemisphere, one on energy, another on cyber, and then we just finished the most important one is how are you going to manage your human capital in the 21st century as well. None of these strategies really existed in our previous 225 years.
Along with the challenges you've encountered, what surprised you the most during your tenure at the Coast Guard?
Probably what surprised me the most was just the, I wouldn't say appreciation, but the lack of knowledge about our broad scope of authorities that exists, not just here in Washington, D.C., but even at the local level as well. At a point in time where it's all about communications in any relationship. So if you're going to have a relationship, be it at the local level or here in the Capitol, it all begins with communications. So the first thing we did is, you know, we need to be out there in social media, on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. And so when key events happen, people follow. We landed 32 metric tons of cocaine on one of our brand new national security cutters last August, a volume that is almost beyond imagination, but worth probably 2 of those ships in terms of the value of the cocaine removed. In one deployment with this one national security cutter, that translated to over 27 million hits in social media. It's free advertising, but people didn't realize the Coast Guard is doing that. The other surprise would probably be the variances, and it's really not a big surprise, but you know, how do we get beyond these pendulum swings in our annual appropriations, which directly impinge upon our ability to renew the Coast Guard? We knew our fleet was getting old, so that was no surprise to me. The surprise was some of the initial resistance that we faced in justifying why we need to modernize the fleet. So I would say the first 2 years have been a bit of a honeymoon. This year, we saw the largest appropriation delivered to the Coast Guard in the history of the Coast Guard, a very pleasant surprise, which allows us to modernize without having to draw down our force structure. So a number of pleasant surprises as I look back in the last 2 years.
So, sir, I'd like to get a better understanding of your leadership style. What are the characteristics of an effective leader? What core leadership lessons would you like to share with us? And more importantly, who's influenced your leadership style?
Well, it probably goes back to, you know, my earliest days as a commissioned officer. But, you know, my leadership style in you can put all of this in policy statements and words and so forth, but it's to be a humble and approachable leader. When I came in, I was told that ensigns are to be seen and not heard. And so even though you might have the best idea as an ensign, it had no value because you're just an ensign. I realized that, you know, the smartest person in the Coast Guard does not sit behind my desk. But that person will be pretty smart if he reaches out to the innovators within our organization and brings those folks and their great ideas and bring them to the forefront, because everybody wants to be valued in this organization. The leader I always look up to is one of our former commandants, Admiral Jim Malloy. You know, he was our commandant during 9/11. He became the first TSA administrator, and he also became the Deputy Secretary of Homeland Security as that department was just being stood up. But he was a commandant who really led from the deck plates. People always came first in everything that he did. And so when I look at why do you modernize new ships, it's not because I want shiny new ships. It's because we're putting, you know, our most valuable asset, our people, in very old ships, and we're asking them to carry out our missions in oftentimes very unforgiving conditions. And I owe it to those folks, you know, to make sure that they have the best tools at their disposal to be able to carry out our missions. But more importantly, if things are broken, I always tell people you have three no's as a commanding officer. I write letters to every commanding officer and officer in charge, 370-some-odd people every year, and said, if nothing else, know when, you know your people, know your mission, and more importantly, know when to say no. You know, if the weather conditions are unfavorable, if your ship people are not qualified to do the mission, it's okay to say no. I have your back on that.
What is the strategic direction for the U.S. Coast Guard? We will ask Admiral Paul Zeekoft, Commandant of the U.S. Coast Guard, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.